Hiroshima the first day, Kyoto, which is a place of temples. I watched the Buddhist temple ceremony, and markets selling food takes place in the same places where the churches are. Well, I watched a praying Buddhist priest in his outfit ringing his bell, and women come along, elderly women, drop in money and so on. Only the elderly are interested in their past superstitions, not so the young. And then the last day, I was in Tokyo itself. It wasn't as busy as I'd feared, but I wasn't there in rush hour. I was there between 2 and 3 in the afternoon. It was like New York and Sydney and Los Angeles. That's busy enough. I must close off so I can take some of your questions, and maybe we may even need to do another tape to cover the questions, but let me just sum up on this. I didn't tell you how when I first got to Nagoya I had to use a phone, and I thought it might be quite different to America, so I got a Japanese boy to get the number for me, and very courteous. Every Japanese person I met was courteous. When you're on the trains, the little girls in uniforms come through selling things. As soon as they come through the door, they bow. Before they go out of the door, they bow. Everybody I met, they bowed. I went to this home, I bowed. Before you go out, you bow. Wonderfully kind. But when I got this phone number, to my horror, there was no answer. And I thought, I'm stuck in Nagoya, where it costs an arm and a leg to get accommodation. Japan is about the most expensive country in the world. It can cost you $100 American overnight for nothing too flash, for accommodation. And horrors. There's no one home. Maybe our message didn't get there. And I'm going to have to go out, and I was tired. It'd been a very long day. Horrors. There was no one there. Then I thought, well, I'd better go back and look. I've got this number elsewhere. And I had one digit wrong in the number I had called. So I called again, and this time struck oil. And soon this young lady, Mina, came with some young friends, and they took me around, showed me some of the city by night, and then landed me at the home. One later night, I was there 3 days in Japan, they took me to a home where there were 4 generations living in the one home. Every inch counts in Japan. Husband and wife often live in different houses. The wife may be staying with her parents and grandparents in the same home. The family I was with, Mina, said she'd been parked out with the grandparents for the first 5 years of life. Most of the day. Home part of the day, most of the time with the grandparents. But there were 4 generations in this one home. And the husband lived next door to the youngest one, except the tiny baby. Anyway, as I look back on the whole 2 months and the privilege of speaking in about 13 different cities and speaking over radio, and I also spoke for the Uniting Church and many, many individual talks, and the opportunity to do some work on the book worth more than $1 million in the libraries, and so on, all this was helpful. I often thought of John Newton's hymn, through many, what is it, toils and snares we have already come. This grace of God has brought us safe thus far, and that grace will take us home. Why don't we take your questions now and see whether we need to go on to another tape for further questions. What questions might you have that are things I should have said and didn't?
Could you speak at all in Japan?
No. As you know, the original names we had on the computer we no longer have.
Well, how did you
learn it? This was a young lady that Paul, my son, had befriended when she was visiting in Australia. Yes. No, I wish we could have had meetings in Japan. There is divided opinions because things are changing slowly, but I got the impression, if the people that spoke to me were representative, that things are slowly on the better trend. That's the impression I got, that there is a turnaround in the gross national product and that there's a very slow ascent of improvement. Now, I don't think everyone would agree with that. There are many people who sympathise with the insurgents, but that, I think, is the majority opinion, that things are on the improve.
Did you bring back a tape of what you did with Gordon Moy this time?
They will send it to us. I asked for a tape. They will send it to us.
What kind of topics did you preach on? Health topics?
Main topics were the gospel. I'm trying to think of the titles. That's 50 meetings ago now. I'm trying to remember what we called them. One of them was The Blood That Spoke, that was one of them, which was talking about how when men are not right with God, they cannot be right with their neighbour. So that was on Genesis 4. The Blood That Spoke, that was one of them. The Danger of Whitewash Religion, that was another one, dealing with Matthew 23, how our Lord finished with eight woes, his ministry that had begun with eight blessings, because he was angry at the wrong type of religion. And I said there's more whitewashed religion now than there was then. And, of course, the Baker Affair has underlined that. Then I took another one on, one was on Realized and Consummate Eschatology, but, of course, we didn't call it that. I think we called it something like Living in Two Worlds. The Christian lives in two worlds. So I spoke about the difference between Realized Eschatology and Consummate Eschatology, the horizontal and the perpendicular, the now and the not yet, these themes, how by faith we have everything, but it'll only be realized at Christ's coming, and that the only person who can do the impossible is the person who sees the invisible. So these were the main topics. I only spoke on health at the Brisbane Congress after we'd shown the Worth More Than a Million tape and explained what we were doing, and people were very, very interested in that. And because of age, people are going to be much more interested, because people are going to realise that unless they preserve their immunity, see, if some people think, and this has not yet been solved, the biggest issue facing the world today medically is whether the AIDS virus can long survive outside a host. Usually it's been thought that a virus cannot survive outside a host. Now there are some people thinking, and some very respectable researchers saying the AIDS virus can survive outside the host and is still infectious. If that horrible thought is true, it's going to change our culture. People will not go to cafes. They'll not eat on planes. The airlines will have already lost over 100 people with AIDS deaths. At least 100 people are dying among the airline staffs. And many, many more hundreds have the virus among the airline staffs. See? So some people now won't even eat on airlines because they say there's such a high number of homosexuals that work for airlines.
They now believe that 100% of people who have the virus will get the disease.
When was that saying? That, I think, is correct. Well, that is correct. That is the trend. Originally, they thought 10%. Then they said 50%. Then they said 75%. Now they're saying 100%. And that being the case, the most important thing in the world for us next to our relationship to God is going to be preserving the immune system. Because if we don't know yet, if the AIDS virus can still transmit itself outside the body, it means it'll be available by casual contact. And the supreme thing in health will be just maintaining your immune system, which is only done by proper habits of eating, drinking, exercise, rest, sunshine, fresh air, these things, these simple things.
Do you realize they're making laws right now to try to make it impossible for you to avoid people with AIDS?
No, that sounds interesting. Sam, what do you mean?
Well, you can't avoid them in the workplace.
Oh, I understand now what you mean, yes. They don't want to make an unfair... However, some of those laws may change if they do find it is true that it can be spread by casual contact. Some research is saying that is the case. Most say it is not the case. So we as yet don't really know for sure.
And they'll turn around in the same breath and say they don't know.
Yeah.
In some cases how it's transmitted.
Well, there are 6,000 in America that have got it who do not belong to any of the high-risk groups. So that's what makes people doubly afraid that it can be casually transmitted. And the Journal of the American Medical Association has plainly said that people who care for AIDS patients are in much higher risk of getting it. So that means there is some way of getting it apart from sexual relations and drugs.
I wonder what kind of religious questions you got from people. Were they just on the topics you addressed, or did they have something on their minds?
Most of them, I think, grew out of the topics. Most of them did. Very few were on the religious controversies of the past, which we settled in the first few years after Glacier View. Very few were on those. I think most of the questions grew out of the topics we presented, and there are the recurring ones. People always want to know the difference between sins of ignorance and sins of presumption. In other words, what is the unpardonable sin, and how can you know whether you've committed? There's always a lot of questions along those lines. So I stress the fact that the presumptuous sin is the high-handed sin, the sin you don't care about, but there is forgiveness for sins you hate and would dearly part with. But the rest, I think, Roy, grew out of the question.
What did people on the radio want to know?
They asked on matters about stress, because I spoke on stress with Gordon Moyes. Yes.
And did you find different responses in Australia and the Philippines from your audiences?
I was surprised at how up-to-date some of the people in the Philippines were with some of the, even the theological issues. They were more theologically oriented questions in the Philippines than in Australia, because we'd settled it in Australia earlier, but not in the Philippines. So most of them in the Philippines, many of them are on the sanctuary.
And what about denominational contact? Was it open in the Philippines?
There's the usual prejudice and bias there, but not among the scholars. They were more friendly. And some of the doctors, very open.
Were
they? Yes. Yes. No. And most times I spoke with those.
And did you speak over there?
Yes, but that was just for morning worship. Yes.
Did you get sick?
No. In the mercies of God, even though there was, the last 12 nights, I've had very short nights, between 4 and 5 hours, I suppose, at times, something like that, for about the last 12 nights, for a variety of reasons, often delay in getting to bed or a necessity of being up early and about and other factors. But no, in the mercy of God, no. I'd had a bit of a break with my son Paul at Gladstone, which was a blessing. I went swimming all I could there and much time in the open air. So that prepared me for the Philippines.
You feel like it was a successful trip?
Oh, I'm very happy about the trip, Roy. I enjoyed it the same way I have enjoyed spending time in India and Palestine. To me, it was fascinating. Philippines most of all. Philippines most of all.
Really,
oh, very impressive.
What was your average attendance?
They weren't huge. The average attendance in the Philippines would have been between 30 and 50, not huge. See, these are just university students, alumni. And a lot of people would have come, but they were afraid of the church. In the Philippines, they're afraid of the church.
But what about Sydney?
Oh, we had a good attendance in Sydney. When I say good attendance, I guess it was about 200, but we thought that was good. We thought that was good.
Yeah. That was a radioactive leak weekend.
That was which?
The radioactive leak was the news here.
Oh, Jill told me that. I knew nothing about it.
Oh,
yeah, of course, while I was travelling, I practically heard no news, about anything hardly, except when I stopped somewhere. And then I'd hear the news, but I have been thirsty and hungry for news.
Do you expect the Worth More Than Million broadcast to be broadcast in Australia, or just?
No, at this point in time, it'll only circulate among our people in homes. Yeah.
Television channels aren't open.
Well, not at this stage, anyway. Australian media is not welcome to religion, and it may come in time, but it won't be for a while.
Why do they have the interest in the television evangelists here if they don't care?
Oh, because it's good news because it's bad news about religion. See, it's good news in Australia because it's bad news about religion. Yeah, there's a lot about it, but they're all throwing off at it. So. Yeah. Oh, yes, that was everywhere.
But they don't have their equivalents there.
No. It's not a religious country. Australia is a post-Christian world. Just as Britain is, as you know. And all of Europe. Europe's the worst. Europe's got 2 to 3% attendance at church. Britain's got 9%. Australia's got 11%. This country's got about 46%. They're the differences.
Are you glad to be home?
I'm glad to be home, but I wouldn't have missed it. But I wouldn't have missed it. It was a wonderful experience. It was really a wonderful experience. And the Lord was merciful at so many points. I thought to myself many times, it's just like an adventure when you're a Christian, because you don't know what's going to be next, but you know the Lord will help you. It's really a great adventure, because I haven't told you a tithe of it. I've just told you some things off the top of my memory. But there were many sort of tent situations and all sorts of difficulties. You know, for example, when you travel like that, you've got to make sure you don't lose your passport. You've got to make sure you don't lose your tickets. You've got to make sure you don't lose whatever money you've got, see? Now, this creates a problem. If I carry things in my pockets, I forever lose things out of my pockets. See, and you can't afford to lose these things. So I'd had Jill do me a pouch that I could wear inside my shirt, but it was too obviously a pouch. And in a country like the Philippines, all they'd have to do is one guy put his arm around there and the other one just grab it. See? So what I did, I knew also that anyone could get into your room. As a matter of fact, they had the practice area, as they do in some places in this country, where you leave the key at the desk before you go off. But anyone could put their hand over and grab that key and then get into the room, see? So what I ultimately did, I left my passport, tickets and everything in a bag underneath the wardrobe. I said, they're not going to sweep under here. And I put it under there and then wrote myself a little note to make sure I collected it before I left the motel. But you always had a lot of concerns like this. And you're so often having to get the documents in a crowd, in a melee, where you have to get either money or tickets or passport. So many things can go wrong. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. One thing is certain as you travel around the world, all people are under the skin very similar. They're all the same basic human needs. And the biggest basic need is to be loved and accepted. And the thing that's acted out in a happy family is the thing that's meant to be reflected in the society. And this is what, of course, is taught by the gospel and the church. And I suppose the conviction that came to me over and over as I travelled and talked with individuals, I had many one-to-one conversations, and as I talked to groups, was the perfect adequacy of the gospel for the needs of the human heart. The gospel is a key to a very complicated lock. The human heart wants forgiveness for its failures, it wants assurance for the future, it wants the knowledge of present help in the now, it wants the knowledge that even though none of us are complete and we all have as many kinks and twists as a corkscrew, yet God accepts us and will use us. The gospel is a perfect key to the human heart, and we're GNU are part of the great family of God that's privileged to use that key to help people find life livable and in a sense a tremendous privilege to be workers together with God and spreading the good news of the love of God. That was my major conviction.
We think you would like to hear from the Filipino Christians themselves. And as I mentioned, they would come to my door at 5:30 in the morning, and then we would jog together and have worship. And on the last day, they came together and sang at the door. That was the welcome at 5:30 in the morning. It was them singing. So I took the tape recorder and recorded some of their singing. And on one of the evenings, the last evening, we met in the open air when again they sang and gave some testimonies. So what you're going to hear in the next few minutes are typical songs from this group of Filipino young people, including the young doctors who lead them, and some of their testimonies after we'd been studying the scriptures and the gospel and some of their theological questions over the week. I'm sure you'll love it. I was greatly inspired by the experience, and I think you will be too.
We got a group here we call Move What International, because it's composed of members who are scattered all over the world. It actually started on MSU campus some 1974, 13 years ago. We composed of young people, mostly students. But this time about maybe we got a little more proportion professionals. It's the price of growing old. We go out every break, summer, Christmas, or semester break, to isolated places. Yeah, usually rural areas, depressed ones, per request from just anybody, be it a member or just an acquaintance, in a certain place, and they coordinate for us. So we see patients, not only patients, we see the whole community during a week-long stay. Usually we leave the place. Everybody are friends.
I understand there are three lady doctors from the one family, as well as a brother medical worker, and that sometimes among all of you, you would interview perhaps and deal and treat with little surgeries and bigger ones up to several hundred a day. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And you also run some hygienic classes sometimes.
Yeah.
As well as some gospel activities.
That's right. Aside from reaching out to people, we try to reach ourselves also. One time or another, or at least once a year, we get together to study the Bible deeper and get enriched ourselves, so that the next time we go out, we have something to share.
That is great.
Yeah, actually, this group is not only medical group, okay?
No.
It's also for, what do you call that?
Fellowship.
Yeah, multifaceted program that we reach not only the sick, but the mothers and the children, everybody from all walks of life.
And may we hear from Peter?
The first time I heard your name, it made me very angry and very indifferent. The first time I learned that the group is inviting you to come over made me very angry. I thought your coming over will make faction, disunity, and dissension among the brethren, and some more. Until I started scanning your books sent by Ati Dilhani, and I was inspired to read more and get enlightened. Thank you for making a difference in our relationship with Jesus. You taught us, you give us a clearer picture of the gospel and a better way in having a relationship with our Savior.
Thank you for coming over for us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let me say, it's been a tremendous privilege for me. I have gotten much more out of this week from learning from you, being with you, and observing you than any of you have gotten from me. And I thank you all. There have been so many kindnesses in so many ways. And just the inspiration of your presence and behavior has been a wonderful joy to me. Thank you very much indeed.
May we hear from Mars?
What? I have no question regarding Dr. Desmond Ford. I just want to confirm the statement said before by his comrades in the profession, the Bible scholars, whom I have met. I have to confirm that you are really a walking Bible. You are really a walking encyclopedia. You are very witty. You are very intelligent. And it's very hard to corner you.
Your style in dealing with us reminds us of how Jesus dealt with his people and with the disciples' people. Even our scene tonight reminds me of how Jesus told stories in the wilderness.
You're very gracious, every one of you. Thank you.
Yes. Although with some problems, which sometimes have made inconveniences,
all the while I'm thinking that Dr. Ford would really be a problem, and I realized that the problem really is not on Dr. Desmond Ford's ideas or on things that he initiated himself in his continuing research of the scripture, but it is the attitude of people that made the real difference. I realize that when you listen to new ideas, some people would really have otherwise reactions, and that's really very observable. However, I consider Dr. Desmond Ford's coming really a blessing. And as I've said earlier, and that's what I've been entertaining in my mind, that whatever things I've heard are not, of course, conclusive, but it has posed a challenge to me to research more and to study more. That's why. Thank you, Dr. Ford, for the privilege of being with us, and of course for heeding the invitation.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Joe, all I could say is the coming of Dr. Ford has really given me a clearer insight of the gospel. He has really presented it as plain as possible and as practical as possible, as Jesus did during his ministry. And I can never forget your coming, and I will be praying for you for your more activities like this and your preaching of the gospel. May God bless you.
Thank you, Joe, so much. Great to meet you.
The one who wrote an invitation for you to come over. I think I was mistaken of writing. I should have made a telegram. Human as I am, I tend to forget. I may forget your explanations. I may forget you. But there's one thing I assure you. I'll never forget the Jesus you made me meet. Assured by the grace that God has given me, I can safely say I'll never be the same again.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And our president?
The president?
Can we stay the same by choice? Can we choose to stay the same, or can we choose to change? Anyway, the gift is just to assure you, your coming is not in vain.
Thank you so much.
And we'd like to see you again in heaven, if not here.
Amen to that.
If you know, it's either who becomes richer first, you or us. If we become richer faster than you, then we will invite you again to come over. But if you become richer ahead of us, please invite the group.
There's a statement that says in Spanish, solamente las montañas no encuentran otra vez. In English it says, only mountains don't meet again.
Ah, that's nice.
Only mountains don't meet again. Perhaps this will be our last evening with Dr. Ford. Perhaps we will meet him again. Perhaps here. Perhaps in another country. Or perhaps in another world. Perhaps in the new earth. We really do not know. And we are sure of the new earth.
If we never meet again this side of heaven, as we struggle through this world and its strife, there light of the river of light, where the charming roses bloom forever, and where separation comes no more. If we never meet again this side of heaven, I will meet you on that beautiful shore.
That was beautiful. Thank you so much. That was a lovely way of saying that Christians never say goodbye for the last time.